It feels very good. I haven't seen the light these today. I came in when it was dark, and so I haven't noticed that. So welcome, and we are going to start our presentation. As I promised, we're going to have an entertaining presentation, and I did promise chocolate, didn't I? And I didn't bring that. It's not good.
Well, it's been at your house then.
Don't worry about it.
That is not good.
You shouldn't have reminded us.
We have to remember. I just remember that I promised.
Well, I was fine until you reminded me.
Didn't have any.
Okay, we're gonna be more diligent about that, staff. So please remind.
Father's minor arthritis.
Well, welcome and good afternoon. Thank you for coming, and thank you for preparing this presentation for us. I am okay with you asking questions as we move along, so that we. Sometimes it's hard to wait for a long presentation and then go over questions. So if I think the format that we will follow is that we will ask members just to step in whenever they need to. So welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourselves for the tape and begin your presentation.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm Larry Martin. I'm the Executive Director of the Legislative Commission on Pensions and Retirement.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Rachel Thurlow, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Pensions Commission.
Members, we've put together a packet for you, trying to come at the topic of public pensions from your perspective, trying to answer some of the basic questions. Why is that an area of legislative concern, and some basic information about Minnesota pension coverage? Ms. Thurlow is going to cover the first couple of questions, and then I will pick it up from there.
Right, so page 3 is the first question. Why is there pension-related proposed legislation for the committee to consider? So most Minnesota public pension plans were created by legislative enactment. They have their plan provisions in state statutes and need legislative action to modify. And if you turn to page 5, you see the various provisions of Minnesota statutes that govern retirement coverage. Just all those. So the statewide retirement plan administration, so PERA, TRA, and MSRS, have the status of state agencies. The first-class city teacher retirement fund associations are nonprofit corporations, and then the majority of volunteer firefighter relief associations are associated with municipal fire departments. They themselves are considered nonprofit corporations. If you turn to page 9 for the second question, how is pension-related proposed legislation initially reviewed and processed? So pension-related legislation is usually referred upon introduction to the Senate State and Local Government Committee and the House Committee on Government Operations and Elections Policy. The standing committees usually postpone consideration of pension-related legislation until the proposed legislation has been reviewed and recommended by the Pension Commission. The Pension Commission has members from both the House and the Senate, and functions as if it were the Senate and House pension subcommittees, and it meets jointly. And finally, the Pension Commission typically assembles and recommends to the respective committee one or more omnibus retirement bills, and fiscal or particularly controversial legislation may be kept separate and considered individually.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator
Hall. When does the report on the Pension Commission come out? Do we hear from
Mr.
them?
Mr. Martin?
Madam Chair, the recommendations from the Pension Commission come out towards the end of the bill hearing period of the session. The Commission, under the joint rules, has until the second deadline to provide its recommendations to you. It has a special dispensation from the normal deadlines and works against the second deadline.
Great. Thank you.
Members, if you can turn to page 12 of your packet, there's some basic information about the Pension Commission. The Pension Commission for 2015-2016 has not been formally appointed yet. Frequently, the Senate members don't change over the four-year period that they've been initially appointed. We haven't heard what the House is planning. So you have the list of the 2013-2014 members. The Pension Commission will organize and elect its chair and start are considering legislation whenever the appointments are made. You have the information there about the commission staff. We're 3.5 full-time equivalent staff. The commission also retains an actuary who reviews the actuarial work by the various pension plans and provides a report to the commission about any difficulties, problems, or any sort of additions that need to be made to the our reporting laws.
Mr. Martin, if you just a second. So, Senator Pappas, in the Senate, I don't think there has been any changes into the composition of the committee, right?
Madam Chair, Senator Saxhog is no longer going to be serving, and so he will be replaced probably by a rural Democrat.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. So we have, at this point, we have about four members from our committee that are serving. Thank you. I just wanted to make sure. So we don't know the composition in the House yet. Okay.
No, Madam Chair, no. The statute for the Pension Commission provides that there be at least two minority caucus members from each body. The Senate currently has five Democrats and two Republicans. I'm not sure what the House plans to do, but there will be several changes in the membership of the commission because of the change in caucus control.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if you look on pages 13, 14, 15, 16, there is a document called the Principles of Pension Policy. This is a document that's been put together by the Pension Commission over its time in existence from the late 50s, and it is at least the starting point for staff when we do our analysis of proposed pension legislation for the Pension Commission, and stands for the general policy of the commission for a number of topics, and so it's there for your benefit if you want to look at it. I'm going to talk a little bit about our Minnesota public pension plans. The first thing, this is on page 17, the number of pension plans in the state and what generally would be the characteristics of Minnesota public pension plan coverage. Minnesota is has the second largest number of public employee plans of the 50 states. We have somewhere in excess of 700. Most of those are volunteer fire pension plans, which provide a lump sum pension and are relatively easy or simple to operate and not terribly problematic. The state with the largest public employee pension plans has over 3,500 pension plans, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And I had the great fortune or misfortune of spending some time in the state of Pennsylvania when they set up a pension commission, and 3,500 plans is an awful lot of pension plans. Minnesota pension plans are in the main defined benefit pension plans. Defined benefit plans are plans that typically utilize some sort of a formula that specify a way or means to calculate the service or the retirement annuity that a retiree will receive, because that's the fixed item. There is a variable item, and that's the amount of funding that's needed to be provided to the pension plan over time. And it contrasts with something called defined contribution pension plans, where the contribution to the pension plan is the defined item, the non-variable item, and the benefit that's provided by the pension plan becomes the variable and will depend upon beyond the level of contributions, typically the investment are results of the public pension plan. So most of our plans, but not all of our plans, are defined benefit plans. The earliest of our public pension plans goes back to actually the 1800s. Typically, we had public safety type pension plans in the middle 19th century. In the end of the 20th century, we started first having teacher pension plans, and then moved on to general employee pension plans. So the general pattern of our creating pension plans is to provide pension coverage for public employees who didn't have pension coverage previously. We've been filling in the gaps periodically, and that's in part why we have a large number of pension plans. Thank you. If you take a look at page 25, I've tried to break out for you for the pension plans that are beyond the particular volunteer fire pension plans. I've tried to give you a sense of the plans, what plan administration runs the pension plan, into what pension fund are the contributions contributed, and what the investment authority of the pension plan is. An awful lot of our pension plans are invested by the State Board of Investment. Mansfield Perry will be up in the next set of presenters. He's the executive director of the State Board of Investment and will be able to tell you a bit about the investment process from the perspective of the State Board of Investment. Page 31 starts the information we have for you on the condition of our public employee pension plans. Minnesota started funding our public pension plans on an actuarial basis in the late 1950s. If you have a pension plan that's being funded on a regular actuarial basis and contributions are sufficient or more or less sufficient, you can expect to see anywhere from two-thirds to three-quarters of the ultimate payout from the public pension plan derived from investment performance rather than contributions. To the extent that you have deficiencies in contributions, the amount that's going to be derived from investment performance is going to drop, and the amount that you have to provide from direct contributions, either from members or employers, will increase. You turn to page 35. The only picture I have in the materials for you is there. And if you take a look, public employee or any pension funding is really trying to figure out how to recognize and how to fund the public pension coverage over time. You look at the first, if the left-hand third of this chart, you can choose. There are different actuarial methods that will give you a different incidence of cost. You'll recognize the cost and you'll fund the cost in one of several different ways. The line that's going up from the lower left-hand corner and heading upwards is pay as you go. That's merely paying the pension benefit as it becomes due. If you start the plan with no absolutely new active members and no retirees, you pay nothing to start with. And as you start accumulating retirees, you start to have to pay more and more and more. The cost pattern is an ever-increasing cost pattern. There are other methods that do it different ways. What it's been picked for, and this was something that your predecessors in the mid-60s did, and have decided that the entry age normal method is the appropriate way to fund pension plans in Minnesota, and that's the one that gives you the level bar across the graph there. So if you're funding under the entry age normal, and that's how we calculate our costs, the goal is to have contributions that are level over time. The rest of the graph that you see is what happens if you have an unfunded pension liability and you have to pay it off. If you either start a plan and recognize pre-plan service credit as allowable service credit or increase benefits or have a large investment loss or in some other way create an unfunded liability, like a home mortgage, you have to pay it off. And so this shows you the before and after look before the unfunded accrued liability is fully paid off on the left-hand side and what the plan would look like once you got rid of the unfunded accrued liability and are only paying the ongoing costs of the benefit plan. The start of some of the numbers that I have for you, and the one I'll spend any time on, is page 36. This summarizes the most recent actuarial work that's provided to the Pension Commission. It aggregates some of the plans together and gives you subtotal numbers. So the far left-hand column of numbers are the total statewide general employee plans. This is the three major pension plans, the state retirement system, the public employees retirement system, and TRA. And that's the biggest chunk of our liabilities, population covered, and funding needs. What you have here is information about the people covered by the pension plan, what's the total liability of the plan, and what are the current assets of the plan, covered payroll, and then the ongoing costs, normal costs, administrative expenses, and amortization for the plans. Compares that to the contributions to the plan, and then on the bottom gives you whether the plan has a sufficiency or a deficiency. Are the contributions equal to what the actuary has calculated for us as other requirements? You're going to see some of these same sort of numbers when the pension plans make their presentation in a few minutes. And the numbers are going to be somewhat different in the numbers that they present for you. If you look under funded status on the upper third of the page, you'll see something called current assets. And current assets is the name for actuarial value of assets. That's not market value of assets. And the pension plan is going to be talking to you primarily about the market value of their portfolios. The actuarial value or current assets figure that you see there is an averaging number for assets. It smooths out the highs and lows of the asset values, and that's what's provided for in Minnesota statutes as the official asset number. At the moment, there's a considerable difference between the market value of assets and the actuarial value of assets. It's in the neighborhood of about 11%. So market value is about 11% greater than the current assets that you see here. The individual results for the plans are on the next pages. So the separate information for MSRS General or TRA can be found on page 37, and then the public safety plans on 38. And so forth. On page 43, I've also given you information about a two-year comparison, looking at the 2014 numbers and putting them alongside the fiscal year 2013 numbers, so you can see what happened in the last year for these various plans. And so the next several charts cover the two-year comparative numbers. On page 51, I've given you some information, look at the some of the pension plans over a long period of time, presented some numbers from 1957 when we first had the first set of actuarial work for our various pension plans, and then pick some years along the way, 75, 92, and 2014, to give you an idea of what progress has been made in funding our public employee pension plans. A little more current time frame on page 52, this compares the actuarial evaluation results 2008 with 2014. 2008, if you remember, was when we were starting to see the impact of the Great Recession. So this is to try and give you some sense about how we've come out of the great Recession. The 2014 number is on the left-hand side. The 2008 number is on the right-hand side for the three major plans, which are the largest in both membership and liabilities and assets. Pages 53 through 59 give you some information about the composition of the membership of our various pension plans, as far as membership, average age, average length of service, average contribution levels, average benefit amounts, and do it over some period of time to give you some idea about what the plan membership on average looks like. Page 60 gives you information about the history of post-retirement increases from our public employee pension plans, and this is up through January 1 of 2015, so it breaks it out for you. Our post-retirement increases are not necessarily driven by the cost of living. They're set percentages. They were one of the chief items that were modified in 2010 in response to the Great Recession, when we tried to when the Iowa legislature tried to readjust some of our liability producing items in our pension plans and to find some savings in our public pension plans. So you can see that several of the plans have smaller post-retirement increases in recent years. There is a trigger built into our retirement adjustment mechanism that will at some point restore the 2.5% general increase per year sometime in the future, and that's a trigger that's driven by the funding of the pension plan.
Madam Chair, just to interrupt for a minute, Mr. Martin, since Duluth has been merged into TRA, why are you still carrying that as a separate line item?
Madam Chair, Senator, they were still in existence on January 1, 2015, and did give away a post-our retirement adjustment, and this is just to report that. In the future, we won't bother to, well.
They were still in existence this month?
They don't fully consolidate until this coming June.
Okay.
And for historical purposes, if you note, the Minneapolis teachers plan is also here. We will treat Duluth teachers the same way we do the Minneapolis teachers. We'll just the separation line will be drawn differently. Page 61 is a question of investments. I've given you some information about the portfolio rates of return by calendar year and by fiscal year on page 62. Page 62 compares the interest rate assumption that we used for doing actuarial calculations and compares that with the reported portfolio performance of the state board and gives you the positive or negative difference. The last item I'm going to talk to you about is the last page, page 63, what sort of issues are likely to be dealt with by the Pension Commission and consequently brought to this our committee this session or this biennium or the near term. We've identified several. The question of the appropriate interest rate to be used for actuarial work is one of the topics that's likely to ought to occur. Minnesota has historically been on the optimistic side of interest rate assumptions, and there's some feeling that we ought to join other public employee pension plans around the country to institute a lower interest rate assumption. If the interest rate goes down, liabilities go up. It's simply a present value calculation. If you're expecting earning less investment performance on the contributions that you make, you have to make more contributions in order to have sufficient assets to pay the liabilities. So the interest rate assumption will be an item. There has for several years now been an item of discussion between whether Minnesota, with its predominant defined benefit plans, should continue, or should defined contribution retirement plans be be emphasized, and I foresee that that will happen again this session. I mentioned that the post-retirement increases that are granted are a function in part of 2010 legislation, and that there are triggers for the restoration of the full pre-2010 post-retirement adjustment rates, because mechanically to have those triggers work correctly, there's likely to be a need for some adjustment in the triggers that are going to occur this year. There are a number of plans that have contribution deficiencies. This is contributions that are a much lower rate than what the actuary says we need for several of the plans, and those are going to have to be addressed over time. State aid and the contribution levels for local government employing units related to MRF. The old MRF, the old Minneapolis Employees Retirement Plan, was consolidated administratively into PERA in 2010. A provision in that consolidation law provided for the plan to be fully merged into PERA whenever it reached 80% funded. That plan did become 80% funded as of this last July 1st, and so it will be merging into PERA General. The current level of contributions by the various Minneapolis-related employers and the state aid that's provided specifically for MRF is at a level which is higher than what is needed to fund the plan, so that there is some possibility to reset those contribution levels and state aid levels, and that likely will be a topic for this session. The question of the St. Paul teachers as the last of the local plans, now that we've merged the Minneapolis and Duluth teachers, the St. Paul is the remaining first-class city teacher plan, and that will undoubtedly be a topic of conversation. State aids as a general matter, there are several state aid programs that are related to pensions. And those aids are likely to be a topic of conversation by the Pension Commission. There's likely to be a proposal to expand the recently established statewide volunteer fire plan to include monthly benefit volunteer fire plans. Most of our volunteer fire plans pay a lump sum benefit, but there are a little more than two dozen plans that provide a full monthly annuity, have a mortality risk, are much more complicated to run, are more expensive plans to operate. And at the moment, there is no mechanism for them to get out of the local pension fund business and to have them professionally managed. And there's an apparent need to do so. So there's likely to be legislation on that topic. And then just the broad demographic question of what happens with a large number of the baby boom working their way through the system and retiring. There will be enhanced numbers of retirements in the next 5 or 10 years, and that will have an impact for the public pension plans. Madam Chair, that's what I have prepared for you to try and give you a quick shot or a quick look at what our public pension plans do. We're here to provide whatever help or assistance this committee may desire as you work through. We'll be here when the omnibus pension bill gets presented, and we'll try and help you then, too.
Thank you. Thank you. We very much appreciate this and appreciate the work of the committee and the staff, of course, because this is quite a lot of information, and it's complicated to digest all of this information, but we need to be aware, and we will be paying attention to kind of the structure that is put together in the House. And I presume that will be coming to us very quickly, since the deadlines.
I hope so.
Yes, the deadlines are kind of are different. So my assumption is that we're going to have to. We typically get the recommendations from the Pension Committee, and then we act on that, and we have representation and that they work very closely with you, but obviously they will come through our committee. Senator Hall, do you have a question?
Yeah, Madam Chair. Mr. Martin, given that we've given the subsidies to Duluth and St. Paul, first off, do we know if that's fixed the problem? And secondly, based on the projections, do we have any level of certainty that you'll need more money in the next 5 or 10 years?
Madam Chair, Senator, the additional state aid that was provided by the legislature in 2013 to Duluth teachers and then made permanent is sufficient to fund the Duluth teachers plan as they are merged with TRA. St. Paul teachers also got an increase in aid in 2013, and that was made permanent last session. The executive director of the St. Paul teachers plan will be making a presentation to you in a few minutes, and I think it would be appropriate to ask her what she thinks the status of her plan is at current.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, we have a representative of some of the larger plans who will be presenting next so that we can have the opportunity to ask some questions about those specific plans. Members, do you have any other questions for Mr. Martin or Ms. Thurlow? Well, thank you so much. Thank you for putting together this presentation, and I think it'll be good for us to keep this information with you members. And so now you have. I am going to ask the next presenters who represent the different plans. So I'm going to call them in the order that they are, that the staff has put them in the agenda. Mr. Backstrom and Ms. Jones. And Ms. Hacking, to please approach the table. Thank you for being here, and thank you for taking the time to do this presentation. It's very helpful to us. And I'm going to ask that you introduce yourself in the order that you see your names in the agenda. Do you have a copy of the agenda? Well,
we don't.
Mr. Backstrom, if you could start, that would be great.
Yep. We'll go this way.
Fantastic.
Madam Chair,
welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you for having me. My name is Dave Bergstrom, and I'm the director of the Minnesota State Retirement System.
Madam Chair, my name is Shana Jones. I'm the Policy and Organizational Planning Director at the Public Employees Retirement Association, or PARA. And just a note, you may be used to seeing Ms. Vanek's face up here. She has the privilege of retiring very soon. In fact, tomorrow's her last day. So I get the pleasure of speaking with you this afternoon.
My name is Laura Hacking, Director of the Teachers Retirement Association.
Welcome.
I'll start with PERA. PERA's retirement plans cover city and county employees. This includes police officers, firefighters, correctional officers, as well as non-teaching school district employees. We currently have over 150,000 actively contributing members, another 50,000 that have left public service but will be entitled to a benefit in the future, as well as 95,000 benefit recipients. In total, across all of our plans, we have assets of over $22 billion as the largest fund in the state. Though our benefit provisions are set in statute, PERA is governed by an 11-member board of trustees. Besides the state auditor, who is a member by virtue of statute, half of our trustees are elected by our membership. The other half are appointed by the governor to represent cities, counties, school boards, retirees, and the general public. In your handout, this one, it looks like this on the front. If you'll turn to page 3, you'll see a chart of our funded status going back to 2007, when PERA was 78% funded, as shown by the yellow line. You'll see the impact of the market downturn in 2009 when we were 54% funded on a market basis. After bipartisan reforms in 2010 and 2013, we reduced our liabilities overall between the funds to almost $6.5 billion. That included increased employee contributions as well as a reduction in COLAs payable to retirees. So if you look in 2014, PARA is pleased that we are at an 82% funded ratio.
Better than before the recession.
Madam Chair, I'll talk about the Minnesota State Retirement System. Again, my name is Dave Bergstrom. MSRS covers state employees, University of Minnesota non-faculty employees, most Metropolitan Council employees, legislators and your staff, state patrol, and correctional. So we cover all state employees. We are the smallest of the three, but we try hard. 54,000 active members. We have 17,300 members who have contributed, are vested, and will someday be old enough to collect or elect to collect monthly benefits. We're currently paying just about 36,900 members. So those are the traditional pension plans that we administer. We also administer defined contribution plans. The deferred compensation plan, it's available to all city, county, state, school district employees, so it's available to everybody in the state of Minnesota. So we've got about 80,000 members in that program. It's about the fifth largest deferred comp plan in the country. And then our healthcare savings plan is available to all city, county,
Madam
school
Chair.
District employees.
Senator.
Madam Chair, Mr. Bergstrom, do you have the I'm looking. You don't have MNSCU out of your purview for their defined contribution plan?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, we do not have MNSCU. They have an individual retirement account, IRAP,
okay.
So they have a self-administered.
Okay.
And then the healthcare savings plan is something we created in 2001 that currently has about 90,000 active employee or participants in that program. MSRS and all of the pension plans are non-executive branch state agencies, which means we don't report to the governor. Board sort of governs us. We serve at their pleasure, leave at their displeasure. And so the board at MSRS is comprised of 11 appointed members from the governor's office. Then most of the rest are elected from our membership. So it's a combination of appointed and elective membership. And we have about $20 billion in assets. And if you turn to the third page from a funding standpoint, and we are using market value. Mr. Martin talked about the actuarial value. And if the markets kind of go up and down over time, you know, they're relatively close. But when we had the steep drop in 08 and 09, the difference in the market value came so disparate from the actuarial value we've been focusing on market value. So if you can look at the green line, which is our general plan, which is our largest plan, in 2007, we were just shy of 100% funded. We dropped to about 66%, and we are now a little over. So our funding ratio has drastically improved from a contribution rate standpoint as well on a market value. We currently have a sufficiency to reach full funding. So we are back on track to achieve full funding. So the changes that we made in 2010 and again in 2013 to kind of slow the growth of our plans, along with the market recovery, have made a very strong difference in our pension plans for all of us.
And here, speaking about TRA, the last column there, we cover all public teachers and administrators, with the exception of the St. Paul teachers. They're in a different fund. Also, on an elective basis, personnel for the state universities, community colleges can participate in TRA, or they have the option also, an alternative to participate in IRS, as was describing. Cover charter school teachers on a managed basis. We have over 77,000 active members, nearly 42,000 deferred members, and over 58,000 benefit recipients. We, too, are governed by a board member that are elected from our membership and retirees. And there are three statutory members who are appointed by the Minnesota School Boards Association, the Commissioner of MMB, of Education, and our assets are slightly over $20 billion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pappas.
Ms. Hacking, perhaps it would be useful if you explained to the committee what a deferred member is.
Very good question. A deferred member is someone who has participated in any one of our plans. We all have deferred members. And they may resign from their position and decide to leave their funds, their contributions, with TRA, MSRS, or PARA. When they do that, they maintain an eligibility for their benefit. When they higher. It's a very good portability mechanism in our system that actually is unique among the states. Not that many state pension plans in other states have a deferred benefit quite like TRAs or MSRS or PARAs. And the value of it is basically when the person does resign, their benefit is calculated and then augmented or increased for every year that is delayed until they get to their retirement age. We each have slightly different deferred provisions, but that's generally the concept, and it does, as I said, provide a very good portability mechanism, and much better than if the person decided to withdraw their funds. It's typically better to leave their funds with one of the systems and then eventually come out for a defined benefit. With that, the funding ratios, our pattern was very similar on page 3. TRA was over 93% funded back in 2007, dipped to about 60%, and now has recovered to about 83%. Like PARA, we still have some work to do. That's a good funding level, much better than we've been at before, but we still monitor our funding ratio very closely, and we'll recommend changes if those are needed to maintain our long-term financial stability. I actually go back to page 2, and this is sort of a prelude, I think, Martin covered this in his comments. He indicated we actually started funding our pension plan on an actuarial basis back in the 1950s. And as a result, this dollar bill illustrates very clearly where our revenue comes from. Because we have been fairly disciplined about funding our plans, 71% of our revenue comes from investment returns. So it's a very, very critical revenue. Employers contribute about 16% and employees 13%. So we're not quite equal, but roughly equal cost sharing from employees and employers. To the extent we have funded our plans well, it means it lightens the burden that would otherwise fall to employers and employees to fund their plans and contributions. One of the success in making the 71% in that high is partly forward funding, but it's also has to do with very good investment returns that we have been able to earn, and Mr. Perry will speak to that. That very briefly gives you an overview, and answer any further questions that you have.
Members, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Hacking, I would be remiss if I didn't ask at least about the rule of 90. I qualify. I was hired before 89, and it's still a hot topic in teachers' lounges. Rule of 90, of course, years of service plus age. What kind of alignment of sun, stars, and moon would have to come together, or philosophically, what do you say at TRA about a rule of 90? Matter of fact, my first teaching job was in 1984, and there was a rule of 85 for 1 year. But talk to me a little bit about the TRA's philosophy on that.
And Chair Senator Dahl, very good question. Rule 90 is a provision that is available really to a shrinking number of teachers. Right now, among our current active members, the nearly over 77,000 active members, only about 20% are under the old 90. So the newer, more recent hires since 1989, that was the cutoff point of those hires after July 1989, do not have eligibility for the rule of 90, and therefore have a normal retirement age of 66, and have some early retirement penalties if they go earlier than age 66. So we understand the sensitivity to that, but that has been a very significant cost element to all of our plans, actually, the age 66 normal retirement age and the phasing out of the rule of 90. For teachers, we were able a couple of years ago with the help of the Pension Commission to institute slightly better early retirement reduction, meaning slightly less onerous early retirement benefits. And now if a teacher does have at least 30 years of service and attains age 62, the penalties are somewhat less than what they would have been under the old law. So we've ameliorated the problem a bit, but I would be misleading to tell you that the Rule 90 could come back, because as you can see, our funding situation is still, we're still recovering, and I don't think we would have the resources for that, but we did make a modest improvement for the long service teacher who does, is able.
Madam Chair, thank you for that, Ms. Hacking. And while it may help the pension, you can see the big strain it has on the school districts themselves when you have teachers that are living on in their, you know, in terms of the pay, the top of the pay scale. And I'll probably teach till 66 anyway, because I love it. But, you know, I just... there's maybe we have a lot of issues regarding seniority and such. I'm not saying I don't know what the fix is ultimately, and I'm looking forward to those discussions. But, you know, I'm interested in Rule of 90 or something, maybe a one-year thing or something like that. But I appreciate the response.
Thank you, Senator Dole. I think this is an issue that we probably are going to be talking about in multiple settings. Unfortunately, you know, we talk a lot about the quality of education, what we need to do in order to elevate the teaching profession, and how we compensate teachers and how we provide incentives and training. And it becomes, these are, you know, this issue is part of the package, you know, the teachers used to get, and they no longer do. So in terms of how you compare the professions, it becomes more and more difficult for some professionals to choose, you know, to come into those professions. So something that we need to take into account. For those of you who serve in education, this is probably an important conversation, of course, in there too. Any other questions, members? Thank you.
Thank you for having
your presentation. We appreciate that. Next we have Mr. Perry. And Ms. Schertz. If you could approach the table and start your presentation. Please make sure you introduce yourselves as you start your presentation, because we have a tape, and so they need to know who's presenting for our minutes.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Mansco Perry. I'm the Executive Director and Chief Investment Officer for the State Board of Investment. Thank you for having us.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jill Schertz. I'm the Executive Director of St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund Association. I'm often confused with Mansco Perry, so I'm glad we have the chance to sit together here today.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. My name is Christine McDonald. I'm the Deputy Director of the St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund.
Thank you.
I plan on giving you a short overview of the State Board of Investment. As you may know, the State Board of Investment has the constitutional authority to manage the assets of the pension plans and also other state funds. Our board is made up of the governor, the state auditor, secretary of state, and attorney general. The governor sits as chairman of our board. We're assisted by a 17-member investment advisory council that includes 10 experienced members of the public who have investment or financial expertise. We're fortunate to have representatives from Target, Cargill, and 3M amongst our members. The three statewide executive directors of the retirement plans also sit as ex officio members of the IAC. The Commissioner of Management and Budget, or his or her designee, also sits on the council as well. The governor also appoints two active members and one retiree member to round out the council. I am responsible for a staff of about 25. And in total, we manage about $80 billion of state assets. Of the 80, $60 billion are pension plan assets. We're also responsible for the various defined contribution plans, the state deferred comp, the health savings plan managed by MSRS. We also manage non-retirement assets, the largest of which include the assigned risk plan, the permanent school fund, the environmental trust fund. We're responsible for the Minnesota College Savings Plan, and we're also responsible for the state cash accounts, which includes the general fund and a variety of accounts for agencies throughout the state. The pension plans are what take up the vast bulk of our time, and as I said before, currently they're about $60 billion. We manage them to an asset allocation, which is the basis for determining how we're going to invest, who we're going to put monies with. About 45% of our assets are targeted to be invested with domestic U.S. domestic stocks. 15% are targeted to be invested with stocks outside of the U.S. We have an allocation target of 18% going to fixed income, 2% in cash, and the remaining 20% is targeted to alternative investments, which for us are primarily private equity, real estate, some oil and gas partnerships, to the extent that we're not quite at the 20% allocation. The remainder gets invested with bonds, so right now that puts us at about 25% invested with bonds. For the pension plans, we have two long-term objectives. The first is over a 10-year period to exceed a composite index, which would the composite index would be the passive investment of these various asset classes. For the 10 years ending at the end of the last fiscal year, we had a return of 8.4 versus a composite index of 8.1, so we exceeded it by 30 basis points. Our other long-term objective is over a 20-year period to produce a real return. And for the last 20 years, we've had a return of 9% versus the CPI of 2.4, generating a 6.6% real return. If you look on page 3 of the handout that the pension plans gave you, you'll see our longer-term returns. That's on page 2 of their handout. In the last fiscal year, we produced, for fiscal year 2014, we produced a return of 18.6%. As I said before, over the past 10 years, that return has been 8.4%. But happy to say over the last 30 years, we've been able to produce a return of 10.3%. Parenthetically, for this current fiscal year, after 6 months, we're only at about 2.4%. We believe that we'll gain a little bit more, but yes.
Just, I'm sorry, Senator Madam Chair, but Mr. Perry, did you mean on page 62? I don't know that people heard you.
On page 2 of the handout that the pension plans gave you.
Oh, on
just
this
the chart.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
So we believe over the long term that we have produced some pretty good returns at the board since fiscal 1980. We've had 22 years where we've produced a double-digit positive return. We've only had 6 fiscal years where we've had a negative return. And that's all I've got for my overview. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Members, do you have any questions for Mr. Perry? Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Perry, as we look at this chart on page 3 and look at the 2007-2008 period of time, we obviously see a significant drop-off in the percentage of funding of all three of the funds, PARA, MSRS, and TRA. One of the concerns I have is right now the market is at historic highs. The market's sitting, maybe not today, the very highest, but we're right near there. What kind of an impact would we have on these percentage funding numbers if all of a sudden we saw a correction in the nature of 2008?
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I don't know the numbers right off the bat, but we would have in any given year if we had the about 20% drop that we had in 2008, we would have a like drop, I believe, for the 1 year period.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Thank you. Please proceed.
Great. Good afternoon. Thanks again for having us here today. We have a separate handout for St. Paul Teachers Retirement Fund. On the first page, we've just kind of given you an overview of our fund, our governance oversights, and an executive summary of the major statistics. I'll walk you through those today. First of all, our fund is focused solely on the teachers of St. Paul. We have been focused on this mission since 1909. Our membership includes only the licensed teachers of St. Paul, so others might fall into PARA or TRA if they are, for example, non-licensed or charter schools. We're subject to very significant oversight. That includes an independent board of trustees, 10 members, nine of whom are elected from our members, a split between active and retired, as well as an ex officio member coming from the St. Paul Public School Board. As well, we're subject to oversight by the legislature, various committees and bodies, and with significant reporting responsibility to the LCPR. We're also audited annually by the State Office of the Auditor, and we have all of our actuarial and funding data computed by an independent, nationally ranked organization, Gabriel Roeder Smith. And finally, I'd like to believe wholeheartedly that the plan is run by a professional group of leaders and staff. In terms of the items that I'd like to draw your attention to today, the first, and no offense to any actuary that might be here, we've included at the top, I think, a representative quote from our actuaries who tend to, again, not be very excitable people. In their view, the fund has improved in all significant and key metrics for pension plans, and we'll walk through those. Most importantly, their conclusion is we are on track to reach our fully funded status by the required date. In terms of metrics we look at, our funded ratio has improved year over year and is on the right path. Our asset levels have improved and regained pre-crisis levels and show stability. Our contribution rates, very importantly, are now sufficient and show great improvement. We also view as very important the demographics that form the basis of our fund. We meet with St. Paul Public Schools regularly to make sure that that's intact. And as some of you might remember, if you were involved in the conversations last year with Duluth, a well-run plan, but they could not overcome demographics moving in the wrong direction. We fortunately have the situation where we have a stable and growing demographic base that can sustain the fund. And then finally, we have a board of trustees and leadership team that's committed to conservative stewardship and over time I think has taken some appropriate action to make sure long-term stability of the fund is observed. I can walk you quickly through the statistics of the fund. We have almost 11,000 members. Out of that 11,000, you'll see there's a breakdown on the second page. Around 3,900 are active. 3,157 are retired. And then, as the other plans explained, we have various status members, what would have been referred to earlier as deferred, also survivors and beneficiaries for the total of nearly 11,000. When we look at our population, we pay a lot of attention to the relative ages. Right now, again, in terms of our demographics, we view it as a very positive fact that the average age of our member, our active member base, is around 45 years old. We're seeing teachers retire at a slightly later age, at 62, and most of them, on average, have about 18 years of service when they retire. And again, at the bottom, we've reviewed for you our contribution rates, an important key metric to sustainability. One of the things, if you'll turn the page, we're obviously pleased about, it's, as Mr. Perry referenced, it's very important to the sustainability of the fund, its investment performance. We think of it not dissimilarly. We think of both short-term performance. We obviously care about the results, but more importantly, we care about long-term performance. On a short-term basis, last year, our fiscal year 14 performance was 18.5% net. And then as we look over the longer track record, we see top-ranking performance on all metrics, 1, 3, 5, 10, and 20 years. And again, you know, no single year will determine the health and stability of your fund, but you must be able to put together a long-term successful track record, which this fund has. When we look at the next page, again, when you strip away all of the actuarial rules and other assumptions, at the end of the day, it really comes down to your core assets. And we presented a slide at the top to show you that change in assets over time. Obviously, with the market correction, you can see assets going down, but more importantly, the line moving in the right direction since then. At the bottom, one of the key metrics I think everybody has focused on is funded ratio. Ours has improved over time. We are now at 68% on a market value ratio, and you can see how that has changed over time from market corrections to changes of interest rate assumptions. And again, that has improved and is on the right trail. On the last page, we've provided for you some bullet points to describe our demographics, as well as some of the measures that the Board of Trustees and staff have taken to make sure that we maintain a healthy fund. And then finally, we'll be coming for various members this legislative session with several items for your review and action.
Thank you. Members, do you have any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Hall.
She'd be the one to ask the status of their plan, and do they assume that it's in good shape? What are the projections for the next 5 or 10 years of needs?
Madam Chair,
yes.
Senator, thank you for the question. What we can tell you is as we look out today using projections, we look out at a plan that's going to be healthy. It has all of the metrics in place to keep it in a healthy situation. And again, some of the metrics that I focus on, I can't determine investment performance over the next few years. Mansco probably can, but he won't share that with me. You know, what we look at is, do we, again, have the demographics in place? Are they stable and rising? Do we have a core asset base that can support it? Do we have an appropriate benefits base that's not overly generous beyond our assets, et cetera? And we believe that we have the metrics in place right now to sustain the fund through the next 5-10 years without additional help.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is for Mr. Perry. Is several of the funds, including Ms. Schertz, have mentioned the idea of keeping the interest rate assumption at 8% instead of, I think it goes back to 8.5% in a couple years or next year. Do you have an opinion in that regard, the 8% interest assumption, given our track record?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, I try to stay away from that opinion. I believe the two should be separated. Our asset allocation, though, is targeted to try to reach a return of 8.25%. But in the past week, we've begun the process of doing an asset liability study, which will culminate in an asset allocation probably in fiscal 16 to be done. And I think that I'd be better able to give some credence to that question at that point in time.
Thank you. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Perry, you pointed out that the long-run rate of return on the investments is 10.3%, long run being 30 years.
Yes.
Which is a very impressive number. Something that's always made me wonder since I got on pensions here a couple of years ago is, all right, so let's say that a typical person has their 401k money or whatever investment money it may be invested over the long term. If you have a long run rate of return of 10.3% or even 9 or 8.4, that's very good. And of course, we know we have ups and downs. You know, market goes down, market goes up, but that isn't a problem. But with these defined benefit plans, if you take a dip, then all of a sudden you get a double, you get a dual effect, because you not only now have a lower corpus upon which you're collecting interest or collecting a return, but you've got people pulling out at the same time. You're still paying out retirement benefits to retirees. So is that why when we take a market hit, we're always stuck here in the legislature potentially having to inject more capital into the fund? Is it because when we take those dives in the market, money still keeps coming out to retirees? It is frustrating to me that obviously the investors have done, the people in your position over the last 30 years have done a phenomenal job. 10.3%. Nobody can argue with that. And yet we have these recurring underfunding issues. Why is that?
Mr. Perry.
Madam Chair, Senator. That question, it's not easily answerable. One reason that we manage defined benefit plans is because it gives us a bit more opportunities to have a bit more control and stabilize growth over the assets as opposed to one managing a defined contribution plan. True, what you saw in 08 was an unprecedented, at least during our lifetimes and the life of the funds, dip in the market. We had a situation where the markets there was a pullback in the market. There's quite a bit of risk. Since that time, we've seen the markets rebound. My belief is that if you look over the long term, yes, in any one given year, you're going to see something that looks out of the ordinary, particularly when you have a situation where you have the worst market performance on record for our funds. As I said before, we've had dips in performance before, but if you'll notice, we had several of those dips in performance back in the 90s and early 2000s, and at that point in time, most of the plans, if I look at the chart correctly, were still at the 90% level. So one of the problems I've got with the way we look at these things are looking at it on a year-by-year basis. We haven't had a prolonged period of time where over a two- or three-year period we've had the type of dip that we had in the 1 year of fiscal 08-09.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Perry, you're right. I mean, any long-term financing program of any kind or investment program, you can't look at a one-year period. The problem is because we come here every year and have to look at the funding of these programs, we sometimes are faced with a decision based upon, okay, we have a bad year. Now the funding has dropped, as in the case of 08, down to, you know, 54, 60, and 66% for para, TRA, and MSRS respectively, and then we're kind of stuck with that. And I'm just wondering if there's any way, short of, which of course would be my solution, leaving the defined benefit model and going to defined contribution, is there any way short of that to prevent this? Because it really creates difficulty for the taxpayer. It creates difficult planning for the pension commission and also for this committee, and it's an unstable system, and nobody can look and say, well, yeah, but it's your fault because you're not getting a return on the money. Yes, you are. The you know, and your predecessors have been getting a return on the money. It just seems to me it is systemically flawed.
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, I mean, the only answers I can give to that, what I generally try to tell people when I get the question in that regard is that These plans are stipulated, I think, in statute to be fully funded by a certain date. And the analogy I try to give everyone is that they're very much akin to a mortgage. Any of us who bought a house, paid for it with the mortgage, over that 30-year plan, over that 30-year time period where we've are paying off the mortgage, it's generally in those last 5 to 7 years that we're paying off the vast bulk of the house. And I'm not certain the, I think 2031 is the date we're due. So I'd say that where we are now, it seems to me that the plans are pretty healthy. I will agree with you that what we have to do, in addition to making good investment returns going forward, is make sure that we manage the other two stools, contributions and benefits appropriately. I spent time in Maryland during the crisis and was very surprised when I go to meetings or conferences at what people said about Minnesota during that time period. We've been one of the few states that has managed our pension programs very well. I guess I've been proud. I was proud to say that I was from here. I'm very proud to be back. I think we have a very strong defined benefit program here.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, this is an interesting topic that I also want to learn more about. This conversation, I know this may not be the time, but maybe, Senator Thompson, we will create a time for those of us who are interested so that we can have some presentations kind of to compare, you know, the defined benefit and the market and the impact and the contributions, and especially since we have some very specific plans into which we have done kind of some permanent decisions, like the teachers' plans. So I find this a very fascinating topic that perhaps will require some voluntary time for those of us who are interested in diving into this and understanding how demographics and the market impact this growth and the differences between those investments. So maybe, Senator Papa, since you are the chair, maybe you and I will try to figure out if people are interested. I'm quite interested in learning more about comparing that and getting some answers to Senator Thompson's questions, because I think that's an important issue that we always struggle to
Madam
kind of
Chair,
go back and forth.
I'm not the chair for long. It's going over to the House, but
okay.
I'm hoping to be elected vice chair.
Okay. So we will talk to
you haven't called me yet.
I haven't lobbied you yet.
To our House members to see if this is something that if members are interested in kind of learning more about, we could probably create an opportunity to have this conversation and get some training. Ms. Schertz, did you have?
I'm fine. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any questions, members, that you have of the panel? Okay. Well, thank you again for giving us a very brief presentation of something that is quite complex, but we are very appreciative of the work that you do and understand the complexities of it, and we'll follow up with perhaps an invitation to have a more informal conversation with coffee to get into some of these market questions that I think are very intriguing that Senator Thompson poses for our committee. If we don't have any more questions, I don't have anything else in the agenda, and we will post. I think we have a couple of bills that are coming to our attention and have bipartisan support. Hopefully, we will have a quick hearing on those issues. And unless members have questions, we appreciate your presentation again, and we will invite you. I'm pretty sure as soon as we know the structure, we will have other presentations and probably after the pension committee gets going with their process, probably you will come back here to share that with us.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we will adjourn for today. Thank you.
I'm okay.
Are you going to try to join?
Since I joined it.
You know, it's interesting. Maybe we can.
Yeah.
This has been the Committee on State and Local Government, January 26th.
Does not have.
I've been sitting here.
I didn't realize
they've taken the work out of here.